Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Sitting across the board from me, as always, and looking lovely, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing good.
Boy, there's been a lot of crazy stuff going on out in the paranormal world.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Again, we've got the fantastic series Paranormal States back on the air. I hope you guys are checking that out with our good friends Ryan Buell and Sergi and Katrina. And Heather and the lovely Elfie. They're all out there. So hopefully you guys are checking out that show and keeping in touch. It's a great series. Been a lot of fun watching that come back. Our good friend Chad Kalick was on the premiere episode from American Ghost Hunter, and it looks like he's going to be doing another episode. Mm-hmm. A bunch of our friends are doing episodes. I'm not at liberty to say who, but there's going to be a lot of familiar faces to the Darkness Radio crowd there that'll be appearing this year.
It's good that Gumby and Pokey are getting their final due in the paranormal world.
Well, yeah. I know. I think we can say this because they've mentioned it on their website. Our good friends Michael and Marty Perry. I can't? It's too late. I said it. But Michael and Marty Perry are on an upcoming episode as well. Oh, isn't that happy music? And Michael and Marty Perry are going to be on an upcoming episode of the show. And we've got, like I said, there's just some other really cool stuff going on. So what was some of the news you've heard going on in the paranormal field here, Mr. Dennis?
I'm not at liberty to say. I'm under contract.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. You got nothing?
I got nothing.
You got nothing? Yeah. How about in the world of UFOs and Mars rovers and everything? Have you been following up on that as well?
No, I've been more into oil prices lately.
Yeah. Why?
Record profits, my friend. Record profits.
Yeah.
I got to get me an oil company.
Yeah, you and me both, sister. So, as we promised last week, we have a huge announcement to make.
Yes, we do.
And we're still not ready to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trust me, we want to make it. It's still something that we're...
on the fence about?
On the fence about.
Okay.
Maybe that's a good way to put it. So with that, I don't want to spend too much time milling it over. I know you guys are going to be all pissed, and Chad Kalick's going to get mad because we're stealing his thing about saying how we're going to break big news and then making you wait another week. But we're got to make it. This is a big decision for Tim and I, so we're going to make you guys sweat it with us for another week here, and we'll make an announcement as soon as we can. I do want to make a quick mention here. On June 8th, Tim, we had a really interesting and a kind of a different show. We had two gentlemen with us, Norman Ober and Nick Roy.
Mm-hmm.
They were two elderly gentlemen that came on to talk to us. Mr. Ober, an 89-year-old man, was sharing his story. His book was called Anita's Heaven, and it was about his keeping in touch with his dead wife, mm-hmm. and remember the bond that they made together, and that she would wait for him, and it was just a beautiful story, very heart touching. Would you say?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Heartwarming, I guess. It was such a delight to do that show. And it was something a little different, but we got news on August 1st. We got an email, and Norman Ober died. On the 1st, I guess at 7:55 in the morning after heart surgery. It was a very long surgery. His body wasn't able to handle the 7.5 hours of surgery, plus going into surgery again 3 hours later as his heart had stopped. But the whole juxtapost of his story is the fact that he and Anita were meant to be together, and mm-hmm. she's been waiting for him. And if you remember the story, it was, like I said, very heart-touching. His wife, who he'd been married to, passed away, and for 18 years he kept that fire going, and their deal was she would not move on out of heaven or onto the next plane without him, mm-hmm. and now he's there. So I guess we can all take a little comfort in knowing that Norman and Anita are back together.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's a good story to come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real pleasure for us to have him on the show. And for people that missed the show, go back into our archives on June 8th and listen to Hour One with Norman Ober. He was just a great guy and had a great story to share. So we'll just take a quick second here. We're going to do a moment of silence for Norman Ober. All right, and we're back. Thank you very much, and thank you all for tuning in and being a part of that show. We got a lot of really great emails about Norman and also about Nick Roy, who was also on our show. I think he's 86 years old. Thankfully, Nick is still with us. Mm-hmm. So
there is no such thing as a darkness radio curse.
That's right. There is no darkness radio curse. But Norman Ober, we wish you well, sir, and I hope that you and Anita are happy. And we're willing to take emails from you, Norman. I know that's how you and Anita are keeping in touch. Mm-hmm. Feel free to reach out and email one of us and let us know that everything's good and that you and Anita are back together again. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I guess there is going to be a memorial that will be held in September as well. And when they release the information to us, we will let people know about that if they're interested. You know, they can be a part of that memorial or send on cards or flowers or something. They can do that. Now we're going to get into tonight's show. Da-da-da-da-da. We're into tonight's show, Tim. And tonight, our guest for the first hour we have with us is the lovely Dusty Smith. And Dusty has been featured on the Discovery Channel show A Haunting in Florida. She's also written quite a few books. She's got a new book out. I'm trying to look at it. It's Haunted Daytona Beach, A Ghostly Tour of the World's Most Famous Beach, and Haunted Deland and the Ghosts of West Volusia County. And I'm sure I'm butchering some of these names. But let's welcome to the darkness on the edge of town, Dusty Smith. Good evening, Dusty.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Tim. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Thank you very much. And thanks for spending some time with us here this evening.
Not a problem. Honored to be here.
You know, we've been trying to get together with you for, what, about a year now? And it's just,
yeah, about that.
There's always something coming around, and one of us is missing the other, so I'm glad we were able to get together. And actually, I'm glad it kind of we waited. We got to see and bump into each other again out at TAPSCon, which was just a couple weeks back, and we got to see each other out at GhostDoc. And something I wanted to talk about, GhostDoc, of course, is run by our good friend Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence fame. And while I was doing my talk, I was talking about thinking outside the box and trying new technology and new things to try to ghost hunt with. And, you know, people have used the Scrabble tiles and people have used different toys to try to get in. We were joking around about the Magic 8 Ball. But one of the things I had brought up in my talk was the fact that I would be interested in seeing what happens with an Etch-a-Sketch, since it's magnetic powder that seems to be working on there. And since ghosts seem to be in a magnetic field, would that have some kind of effect? So I'm just curious. Now, you said that you actually put this to work for you. Is that correct?
Yeah, we sure did. And, you know, what's funny is, you know how it goes when you go to these conferences and,
right.
and conventions and things. You know, you're so busy doing so much that it's really hard to find time to actually sit in on, you know, your friends' lectures and people that you want to hear their lectures and things. And I walked in, like, 5 minutes before you said the bit about the Etch-a-Sketch, and I was like, boom, got hit in the head with a 2x4. And I said, you know, we've used so many other, like, kids' toys with little lights and things like that to try to communicate. Why not the Etch-a-Sketch? So when I got home from GhostDoc 6, I went and bought several different things. We mm-hmm. actually bought two different brands of Etch-a-Sketch type toys, and then we bought what's called fuzzy faces.
Oh, right, the little guy with the magnetic chips for
yeah,
and you can make beards and mustaches.
Right, exactly.
Gotcha.
And I was really excited the first case we went to use these and see, you know, what would happen.
Right.
Turns out that a gentleman committed suicide in the home, and he was being pretty active and not in a real good way. He'd been, you know, throwing different items around and scaring their son and things. And we did about a two-hour-long EVP session in the room where he committed suicide. And the last question I asked was, why did you commit suicide? You know, and we had audio recorders and videotape and everything else running. And I said, look, I'm exhausted. I need a break. So we went out, took a break. No one was in the house. We come back in, and not only was there a name written on the Etch-A-Sketch,
there was
a little fuzzy-faced guy had a mustache and a little goatee. And I thought, oh, my God, this is, like, crazy, you know? So I talked
Now, how
to the
clearly
client.
Was it written? I mean, I'm just curious with this.
It was, when I first looked at it, I thought it said Gulch, because it was not real clear. And we were under the assumption that the gentleman in the house's name was different than the name that was written. We thought his name was Harry, and it turns out that his nickname was Butch. And when the client said, oh, no, it says Butch, I looked at it again, and I said, oh, my God, you're right, you know. And, of course, I went through the whole thing. I made everybody on the team, the client, everybody that was present, write Butch to make sure that we didn't have similar handwriting, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal.
Well, that's awesome. Now, did you say that it even went as far as to draw little designs on the face for you as well?
Yes. Yes.
And did it make it look like the guy that killed him, or was it just random made faces?
The other thing is this Butch had one of those little teeny tiny mustaches and mm-hmm. a little, you know, the little shot of hair on the bottom lip, you know, the kind of goatee.
Oh, the Chris Fleming soul patch. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, okay. And that's exactly what was on the little fuzzy face, you know. And, you know me, I still was like, okay, you know, I don't know. You know, I was still not buying it. And when we were packing up, I was actually talking about the fact that, you know, I couldn't wait to see the video to see, you know, if somebody came in the room while we were outside, you know, if, you know, I wanted to see. I wanted to make sure that there was no screw-ups anywhere. And as soon as I said it, this ceramic bowl flew off of this shelving unit on the wall in the dining room and almost hit one of my researchers in the head.
Wow.
And I went, okay. So that was a kind of interesting benefit as well. Then we tried it on another case. We've actually used it on three cases so far. The second one we tried it on, we had brought a sensitive with us. And she supposedly made contact with a Native American girl about 6 years old. And what was really interesting was we weren't getting words. We were getting images, pictures. We got a snake. We got some sort of symbol. We got a little smiley face-like thing. And then there was this ceramic owl that the client had said the spirit liked to move around the house quite a bit. And sure enough, when we were there, it moved several times. So that was another kind of interesting one.
Well, look, and think Parker Brothers thought they had the market cornered with the Ouija board, huh?
Yeah, no. Heck with that. You know, we've been using the Etch-A-Sketch thing, and it's working great, you know. And I'm all for trying, you know, new things, and I'm sure, you know, the scientific community is really going to raise eyebrows over this one.
Let me ask Tim this. Tim, do you know, do they make, because we're talking about the Etch-A-Sketch and the magnetic powder in it and the fact that ghosts seem to be able to manipulate magnetic fields, just scientifically, hypothetically here, Tim, is there a place, do you know of, can you buy magnetic filings, magnetic dust, if you will? Do you know of anything like that?
Heck, you can make it.
Really? What do you do it on?
You just file down any type of metal and then rub magnets over it.
And that'll just magnetize them?
That should make it magnetized, sure.
Because I'm wondering, Dusty, too, what if we opened up...
Or file down a magnet.
Yeah, file down a magnet. What if we opened up a magnadoodle or a Etch-A-Sketch, poured the powder on the floor around like a ball or something, and then left the room to see if the powder gets disturbed? Because again, if the magnetic field is able to manipulate that, it should sway that dust as well, shouldn't it?
Well, see, now that's another one that we've done before.
Oh, really? Okay.
We haven't used the magnetic dust, but we've used regular baking flour and baby powder. The one that comes to mind.
Right. And I've heard that before with the baking powder and that talcum powder and stuff.
Yeah, it works great.
You know, you lay out a couple of big black garbage bags,
sprinkle it with the powder or the flour, and
sure.
The one case we actually did get footprints through our flour, you know, so that was kind of interesting.
Is that footprints in your flour, is that anything like tiptoe through the tulips or what?
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
Well, I wonder what the magnetic filings, though, if the magnetic powder would be easier for them to manipulate. I don't know. I'm just something to consider. Maybe we'll try that as breaking one open and seeing. Because I'm all for experimenting in the field and getting involved with trying to find new ways to make communication and get these barriers broken down. What do you find when you're out investigating is your best tool? What do you seem to get the most response from?
That's a toughie. I'm so old school that I like using, you know, string with bells and the flower, and, you know, the magna doodle thing is an awesome addition. I think, though, the audio recorders have to be the number one thing, because, you know, you can't manipulate them. Because EVPs come in on such a lower megahertz, it's really hard to recreate an EVP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with digital technology and cameras, it's so easy to recreate stuff now, you know, that we don't ever accept stuff from clients as, you know, as true evidence. You know, we've got to figure it out. You know what I mean? So I don't know. There's so many things in our arsenal. I mean, dowsing rods are a huge thing that we use. We've got several different types of metal and sizes of dowsing rods. I don't know. That's a tough question, Dave.
Well, now, dowsing rods, see, that's something that's still... That's the piece of equipment I still have the hardest time with.
Really?
Because I think that of anything that you could hold or anything you could use... You know, I understand that there's theories that we may be imprinting ourselves on EVPs,
mm-hmm.
and we might be imprinting our own thoughts or our own responses.
Right.
Hence why a lot of EVPs sound like the exact same voice.
Right.
Wherever you go, you seem to get the same kind of EVP and the same kind of voice. And we get the same kind of responses in some photography and things like that. My problem with dowsing rods is that even the slightest bits of kinetic energy from your body can make things happen. So I just wonder if we're influencing dowsing rods more than they're being influenced by an outside source.
Well, I think we can kind of say that with a lot of the equipment that we use. Like you just said, I mean, even an EMF meter, you know, we can pretty much set off ourselves. With EVPs. One of the ones that we got years ago, this is absolutely my favorite. We were working in a house that was converted into a business, and nobody knew the history of the place except for me. And I had one of my younger researchers sitting in the stairwell where I knew a young girl from Great Britain had fallen down the stairwell, broken her neck, and died. And when she asked, "Did you die in this house?" the EVP that we got back said, "I'm not dead," in this great British accent, little girl's voice. I mean, it was awesome. It was the most awesome thing I'd ever heard, you know, and that's when I kind of went, wow, EVPs are really cool.
Oh, yeah, EVP is my favorite form of ghost hunting because I just like the immediate results that we can get with it and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And doing that. And then, you know, we work with friends like Mark and Debbie Constantino who are amazing at getting EVP.
Yeah, oh, gosh, he was great. I got to meet him at TAPCon, which was a phenomenal event. You know, it's the hotel, everything, the hotel, the staff, the people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that impressed me the most about it was all the volunteers. You know, I'm not a big name You know, I'm locally famous. I walk in Walmart and people go, "Oh, you're the ghost lady." You know, but when I was over there, the staff treated me like I was, you know, a Jason Hawes or a Grant Wilson, or, you know, there were no lines between it. Everybody was on an even playing field, and that was really nice. I mean, they stopped by frequently, asked if, you know, I needed anything to drink or...
Wow, you know, who do you have to know to get that kind of attention? I was fighting just to be able to walk in a room. I'm just kidding.
Hey, I gave you a stress ball, man.
No, you did. I thank you for that. And I had to use it quite often. No, that's hilarious. Yeah, and actually, one of the gals there, Summer, who was assigned to helping out and doing quite a bit, man, she was great. I got re-addicted to Yoo-Hoo out at TapsCon because of her. Damn it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she brought me some great Yoo-Hoo, so I've been craving it since I went out to TapsCon. I know, Tim. TapsCon, Yoo-Hoo. Who would have thought the two would go together?
She brought you some great Yoo-Hoo.
Great. You know, you're sick. Yoo-Hoo with the can of chocolate milk. Well, we have to take our first break here, Dusty. Thank you for being with us, and everybody stick with it. We're going to talk to Dusty a little bit more about the ghosts out in her area and her expertise with ghost hunting. We'll be back with more right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Me llamo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the 7-bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
And welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. You guys are going to want to stay tuned for hour two, because we're going to be talking, can you believe it, Tim? I've changed some of my thoughts on orbs.
I love a lovely bunch of orbs.
Yes.
A lovely pair.
There's some stuff that I'm willing to revisit on the idea of what an orb may be. It may not just always be dust or bugs. Yes, it can be reproduced, but we'll talk about that more in the second hour with our very special guest. So stay tuned for that. Yes, Timothy?
And if you have a lovely bunch of orbs out there and you want me to revisit it, it's tim@darknessradio.com. Shoot me an email.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I think I just may shoot you. We're going to go back to tonight's show right now for the first hour. We're here with Dusty Smith. Dusty, help me out. Tim wants to see orbs. Can you help the guy here?
See orbs?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you my opinion on them.
Yes, let me hear what your opinion is.
This is something we've gone by for a very long time. You know, here in Florida, we get a lot of high humidity, so a lot of the orbs that we catch, especially at night outside, of course, are humidity.
Right.
But basic physics dictates energy doesn't die, it only changes form. What are human beings made of? Bunch of minerals, energy, and water.
I thought it was snip, snails, and puppy dog tails.
Okay. So if energy doesn't die and only changes form, the easiest form for energy to take is a sphere or a ball. There is a very small percentage of what's being photographed as orbs that are once living human or animal spirit in nature. And the way that we say the difference is that they have to either emit light, cast shadow, show movement, and or be three-dimensional in shape. We'd like to have all four of those qualities, but if you look at our website, there's actually one photo of an orb on there. It's called Spirit of a Dog. And we took the photo near the grave of a once very famous Daytona Beach area dog. He was actually the Goodwill ambassador for the area for many years. And, you know, I know when you see some of these shows where they go, look, there's a smiley face in the orb.
Right.
You know, I go, oh, my God, it's just a piece of dust, you idiot, you know.
Either that or you're being haunted by a 1970s button. I always tell people.
Yeah, exactly. It's the guy from Forrest Gump that made those T-shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but this particular orb, we actually found a photo of the dog and compared the face in the orb to the original newspaper photograph, and everyone that looks at it goes, oh my God, it's him. you know, and that point was when I said, you know, and I've been doing this for almost 5 years at that point, that's when I said, wait a minute, maybe there is a little something to this orb stuff.
Right.
So that's when we kind of came up with a bunch of guidelines and said, you know, look, we're not going to say, how are you supposed to be an open-minded, hello, skeptic, if you say that all orbs are dust, pollen, whatever, okay?
Right.
You have to give a little bit of leeway there and say, okay, there is a possibility that this is, it could be something in paranormal in nature, or at least a small percentage of them. You know, I cannot close my mind to, and say all orbs are dust. I can't do it. Not after seeing that photograph and not after studying physics for a long time.
Yeah, and that's what I, like I said, I don't want to give too much away because I really want to delve into this for the second hour. But yeah, I had kind of a reshaping of thought. And I will admit, you know, I'm an open-minded skeptic, I believe in most things. But then there are some things that I've, you know, like fairies and trolls and stuff, I just can't wrap my head around. Have you ever had any experiences with stuff like that?
Well, one thing, if I hope you don't mind me bringing this up.
Go for it.
My cemetery group, you know me. I don't know if all your listeners know about our cemetery group, and you know...
No, go ahead and actually start with that real quick. Just explain what you do with your cemetery group, and,
okay.
And that way, and then people can know how to help you and reach out for that as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm the president of the International Association of Cemetery Preservationists, and what we do is we adopt, restore, and preserve abandoned and neglected historic cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we hold an annual fundraiser where wonderful people like you, Dave, and Patrick Burns, and Jason Hawes, Grant Wilson, Troy Taylor, Keith Age, or you name the people, we've got them donating stuff, whether it's a signature on an 8x10 or, you know, whatever. And then we sell raffle tickets and use that money straight, you know, go straight to our cemetery preservation project. And anybody that would like to see what we have so far or would like to buy raffle tickets can go to our website, which is www.iacpinc.org.
Why don't you give that website again a little slower here?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead and give that website again just a little slower.
Oh, okay. It's www.iacpinc.org.
Okay, great. And we'll put that up on our website, too, so people can link to it as well.
I appreciate it, mm-hmm. And I really do. I have to thank everyone in the paranormal community, from Eric Altman sent us some plaster casts of Bigfoot footprints. Frank Prescino gave us a copy of his book and a T-shirt for...
Well, heck, I could have just knocked him down and taken one of his shoes, and then I could give you Tim's shoe. I mean, that's as good as having a Bigfoot footprint, isn't it?
Oh, there you go. Okay, we'll take it.
He's got gargantuan feet. They're huge, Dusty.
Oh, no.
You know what they say,
Eric. He might want to make a plaster cast.
He even has dermal ridges, so it'll look, you know, professional.
Oh, there you go.
Well, yeah, so people can help you again for helping to restore some of these historical sites.
Exactly, and tickets are only $1 a piece. We'll mail them to you. You can pay via PayPal, send us a check, money order, whatever.
Very cool. Well, now talk to me a little bit about that, too. As I was asking you before, I mean, do you guys have any? Have you ever dealt with elementals or trolls, fairies?
Whole trolls and fairies and stuff like that. Again, I'm not saying that they're not out there,
mm-hmm.
But we've never dealt with them as far as I know. Elementals, in the almost 15 years that I've been doing this, we've worked 2 cases that we believe were elemental in nature.
Now, explain to the listeners, too, Dusty, what is an elemental? What is the difference between an elemental, a ghost, a demon, a, you know, a malevolent spirit,
right,
a poltergeist?
Actually, elementals are relatively close in the way they behave to demonic activity. They're very negative. They can create hot spots instead of cold spots. They make all kinds of deep guttural noises on EVPs. They're not nice. But the difference being that demonic in nature activity is to basically tear a family apart. An elemental haunting usually has something to do with the area. And to give a good example, we worked a case in Jacksonville several years ago after the hurricanes had come through. Guy lived in the house for 20 years, never had a problem. All of a sudden, his neighbor's tree comes down, hits the corner of his roof, and he's having all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So we come in, and we research the house, and sure enough, we find, like, a lot of crazy stuff going on. And he finally tells me that this yew tree, which is a very sacred tree to the Native Americans of the area, came down in the storm, and he wound up cutting it up. And I said, okay, how about we replant a yew tree, dedicate it to this elemental, and see what happens. And sure enough, he went to a nursery, picked up a little sapling yew tree, planted it, and of course we stood out there sounding like morons, going, oh, elementals of the earth and the trees and the you know, we are giving you this gift of this tree to replace the one that the hurricane took. You know, going through this whole thing,
right.
And, you know, and guess what? The activity stopped.
Hmm.
So, you know, that to me said, okay, yeah, we were dealing with an elemental.
Very interesting. So elementals, you find that they can be as nasty as some of the demonic, but it seems more like if you're just encroaching on their territory, right?
Exactly.
They don't go looking for trouble, right?
Deal with trees, flowers, plants, and, of course, the ground. Air elementals, that's self-explanatory. Water elementals, again, self-explanatory. And then fire elementals are usually around volcanic activity, lava flows, things like that. There's not a lot of research done as far as elementals go. A lot of pagans know and understand what they are. Which makes it a little bit easier to help deal with them, you know, if you're coming at it from that spiritual aspect.
Right.
But, yeah, they are out there. They're few and far between. But, you know, if we're doing a case where they're not getting why what's going on is going on, and, you know, they're thinking it's maybe demonic and trying all the standard ways to, you know, bring that type of haunting to a resolution and it's not working, you may want to look and see if it's possibly an elemental.
Now, are there telltale signs? I mean, like with demonics, we get the nasty smell, things wrapping in numbers of three that seem to occur. Is there a way to tell the difference between an elemental and a demon?
Yeah, it's, like I said, they've got a lot of similarities to a demonic haunting. One of the things we've noticed with the couple that we have worked is that they tend to walk very heavily, usually across the roof or up in the attic. We don't have a lot of basements here in Florida, so I'm not sure about other geographic locations in the U.S. or even in the world. The smells are more like compost, rotting flesh, burnt trees, things of a more natural source, whereas with demonic hauntings, you're usually dealing with smells of excrement, sulfur, things like that, vomit, yay. And then, again, the EVPs that we've caught are very guttural, growling-type noises, where with demonic hauntings, you usually get voices that sound neither male nor female. They're very hermaphroditic, however you say that word. Is that a word?
It sounds like a good word to me.
Okay, if it is.
If George W.
Word.
Can come up with strategery, you can come up with hermaphroditic. I'll give you that.
Okay, great. Works for me. So, and then again, mostly hot spots, although they can create cold spots, especially if it's a water elemental in a northern area, because then you're going to deal with ice and snow. And if it happens to be that, then, you know, you're going to deal with cold spots as opposed to hot spots.
Well, let me ask you this, too. Now, you know, I dealt with a strange event that happened, oh, about a year and a half ago. I went with a couple of friends of mine to this forest preserve out in Illinois. And it's a well-known spot, and it's supposed to be haunted, and, it, you know, it is an actual Indian burial ground. When you come into it, there's this big rock that's dedicated to the Indian family that is buried there. And we were walking through and talking, and suddenly there was this loud wailing sound. I always try to do it for people, but it'll probably sound even weirder over the phone, but it was just kind of, it almost sounded like a siren at first, because it was this high-pitched noise, and it went, and then it started to get really loud, like a tornado siren or air raid siren, and then all of a sudden it flipped into just what sounded like thousands of dogs. Thousands. Hmm. I mean, just... And they're charging through the woods at us.
Wow.
My friend goes, oh, crap, Dave, there's coyotes out here. And I said, that many? And he said, yeah, and they'll attack. So, being the good group we are... excuse me, I'm fighting a little bit of a cold here. We all reach out and grab a stick and go back to back, right? And we're standing there waiting for these things, and it's coming through the woods, man. It's just getting louder and closer and louder, and you can hear trees snapping and branches moving, and it stops.
Huh.
Not another noise. And not even like, you know, when dogs go and pack, I mean, you know, they'll shut up, but then you'll hear a couple of the straight, you know, you'll hear the little grumbling dogs still going. There was nothing. And the sound of brush and trees stopped. Everything just, boom, just it was gone. Now, would you consider that an elemental?
That, you know, because that's another thing that elementals will do is manipulate sound, manipulate natural noises. You know, anything like that. I mean, there's so much about this world that we don't understand. I mean, you know, as far as Native American beliefs go, you know, they have all kinds of spirits mm-hmm. that roam the earth for various reasons. And most of them are to protect their sacred areas. And, you know, for all you know, this could have been, you know, some sort of sacred ground of theirs where they didn't want you trespassing, and their little spirit guardians, you know, said, what's the easiest way to scare them? Ah, we'll bring out the spirits of all the wolves and coyotes and make them be afraid. You know, I mean, just the best guess, but, you know, it's very possible. We don't, this is what I love about this field. There are so many questions and so few answers, and the more answers we think we get, the more questions we wind up having.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we have to take our second break here, Dusty. Hold on. We're going to be right back with more. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
And welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and our guest this evening is the lovely Miss Dusty Smith. Dusty, let's talk about your book. We've got about 15 minutes left here on the show. Let's talk about your newest book and tell us a little bit about it and tell us some about the best ghost stories you've been able to collect out there.
Okay. Well, most people know my first book, Dread and the Dead Filled the Dunham House, which was the one that was filmed for the episode on the Discovery Channel series, A Haunting, and was nominated for Paranormal Book of the Year for 2007.
Very cool.
My one is Haunted Daytona Beach, A Ghostly Tour of the World's Most Famous Beach, which the book in and of itself is kind of unique because, number one, nobody's ever written ghost stories about this area in such a way. We actually documented the ghost stories. We didn't just take local folklore and throw them into a book. We went out and researched these stories, and the ones that we found to be true hauntings and documented as true, we included in the book, which is kind of cool. I have a couple of favorites in that book. The Pink Lady, I think, is one of my favorites. She had two loves in her life. One, of course, was her husband, and the other was gardening. And when she got a little older, she couldn't keep up with her gardening chores. And her husband, who was a very jealous man, didn't want her to hire any help with her, you know, to help her with the garden. But, you know, when he finally realized that if he didn't let her hire somebody else, he was going to have to get out there and do the work,
right.
That's when he agreed. And
it's funny how we men figure that out eventually, huh?
Yeah, it's that honey-do list, you know.
Uh-huh.
But one of the, when she, you know, have this guy working for her, of course the jealous husband decides that they're having an affair, and of course there was nothing going on except the love of gardening, but he confronts them, winds up firing the gardener, and then murders his wife, and he buried her in the backyard. And several years later, the family that moved in, because it's actually still legal to bury your family on your property in Daytona, as long as you have a special permit and blah, 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 you have to have a certain amount of acreage. And this other family moved her body over to Pinewood Cemetery, and it was a family burial. Well, he moves back to the area, finds out that they move her to the cemetery, and when he covered up her grave, he had used pink phlox flowers because pink was her favorite color. And he goes to the cemetery, sees her grave covered in these flowers, has a massive heart attack, and dies on the spot. Well, in the spring, when you go to the cemetery, you can still see an imprint of his body on her grave.
Really?
So I told the story on my tour one night, and the couple that owned the house happened to come on the tour that night, and they said, oh my gosh, we have some activity at our house. Would you come check it out? And I said, sure, no problem. So we go over, come to find out they've got a very interesting patch of pink flowers in their backyard that's in the shape of a female body. His daughter also looks very similar to the way that the woman looked when she was in her late 30s, early 40s, and every time she would come down to visit her parents, she'd try to sleep in the bedroom that would have been the couple's master bedroom, and she'd get woken in the middle of the night, gasping for breath and feeling hands around her throat.
Oh, geez.
And that's the way he killed her, was he choked her to death.
Wow. So there's something to be said for that, huh? Holy cow.
Yeah. Daytona's a pretty charming town when it comes to its ghostly and deadly history. A lot of rum runners, harlots, mobsters, things like that. This was a very interesting town years ago, and you know, a lot of people don't realize the history that's here. They think it's all NASCAR, bike week, and spring break, and that's not the truth, you know. And now the new book, which will be out first week of September, is called Haunted the Land and the Ghosts of West Volusia County, which you did very well for pronouncing that. There's also never been a book written about the ghost stories over there. Towns like Deland, Casadega, we have a couple of ghost towns here in Florida. So I wrote about St. Francis and such. And this book was a lot more fun because even though a lot of the stories are true and we did research them,
Dusty?
There are...
Uh-huh? Can you hear that screeching over the phone?
No.
Wow, Tim is just looking perplexed at me. We don't know... Oh, and it's gone. Well, I apologize to anybody out there that had to deal with that, but that was horrible. Ooh, yes, I'm talking about you. Please stop. Thank you. All right, you didn't hear that, huh?
Ooh. No, uh-uh.
Wow, this is horrible, Tim. I don't know what's going on. It's just exploding. Can you hear this?
No, I don't hear anything except you guys.
Wow. Yeah, it's like something screaming at us here.
Huh.
Bizarre.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, nice. Keep your damn ghosts to yourself, would you? Maybe this one doesn't want you to tell the story, Dusty. I don't know. That's horrific. All these people that are going to be at work listening to this later on, Tim, with their little headphones on, all of a sudden they're going to hear the ring, rah! Between that and
right?
my squealing and barking
right?
at them,
oh
they're going to...
Oh, my gosh, that's too funny.
They're going to freak out. I'm sorry, so go ahead. You were saying...
Well, one of my favorites about that area, of course, is absolute folklore and legend. comes from the town of Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp, and it's the legend of the Devil's Chair. And it's just such a great story. I had to include it in the book. So there are a couple of folklore stories in that one. But again, most of them are cases that we documented, and a couple of them are very creepy. There's one about an old honey processing plant where the owner of the plant and his drunk poker buddies killed five young boys, and buried them. And now the hotel that's built on top of the area where they buried these kids in unmarked graves is extremely haunted. We actually documented temperatures in the section of the hotel where they found these little boys buried over 1,000 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a good book. I think it's actually the best one I've written so far because I had a lot of fun writing it this time. I wasn't under a lot of pressure to get it done on any, you know, time frame or anything like that. So, and they gave me a little more leeway with creativity this time than in the past. So it's a good book. I like it.
Well, good. And how can people get your books? Where are they available?
The Daytona book and the DeLamb book are through the History Press. They can either get them from me through the websites or eBay. I sell everything on eBay. If they come on our ghost tour, they can get them there. And, of course, I sell them less expensively than the publishing house does, plus Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, you know, all the online sites. And then the Dunham book, again, they can get from me, or that one was done through Publish America.
What do you find, with all the years that you've been investigating, what has been the most, and we like to do this, we always like to leave people with some of the scarier stories, what's one of the scarier things that you've been through yourself personally?
That would be looking at my checkbook.
Yeah, you and me both, sister. Gas prices and my checkbook every week, that scares the hell out of me.
Or calling my mother. No, just kidding. Actually, the scariest experience was working the Dunham case, you know, because that we did have demonic activity in the house. We also had an elemental, several residual hauntings.
Now, how do you guys deal with a demonic on your team? Who do you have that you dispatch to take care of those kind of things?
Well, we tried everything. We brought out priests. We tried cleansings, we tried exorcisms, the whole nine yards, and this sucker was dug, you know, deeper than a tick on a hound dog. I mean, it would not leave. And, you know, after months and months and months of trying, we finally just, you know, said, look, you guys got to leave, because this thing was focused on their infant daughter, you know. But couple of things that happened on the case was, I got my hair yanked so hard that I actually herniated two discs in my neck. And then a couple of months later, they threw a set of golf clubs at me and I broke three ribs.
So you're really loving your job so far, huh, Dust?
Oh, yeah. You know, well, it's like I tell everybody, you know, the first piece of equipment every paranormal investigator should carry with them is a spare change of underwear.
Spare change of underwear and, I guess, your insurance card, too, if they're going to be throwing stuff at you.
You know, guys should wear a cup, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, is this dangerous work? No, it really isn't. You know, these cases are few and far between. You really don't have cases like this crop up that often. You know, so the likelihood of people getting injured is more often related to their flight or fright response. You know, there's only one recorded case in U.S. history of a ghost actually causing the death of a human being, and that would be the Bell Witch of Adams, Tennessee. And even though it was a well-documented case, there's still a lot of questions surrounding it, so that we don't really know, was it a spirit or was it the woman that John Bell had so many issues with.
Right. And that was just a heart attack from dealing with it, supposedly, correct?
Exactly.
Right. But now, you know, people always ask the question, Dusty, can a ghost hurt us? What is your honest belief? Now, you know, there's also the theories that, well, a ghost can't lift it or move anything over 10 pounds. Have you heard that?
I don't know. I mean, those golf clubs were pretty heavy. You know, I think it depends on the circumstances, the situation. I mean, what level of haunting you're dealing with. There's a lot of factors involved. I don't think you can say it's one thing or another. The possibility is there. So it's very important that, you know, researchers and investigators be aware of their surroundings at all times, and know the possibility is there. Again, like orbs, it's a very small percentage,
right?
But yeah, it does happen. You know, you do this long enough, and you expose yourself to these things enough. I mean, basically, I do this 7 nights a week. You know, I have the ghost tours 7 nights a week. We mm-hmm. work 1 to 3 cases a week. Plus, I have the cemetery group, so we're running security frequently out there at night, which our cemeteries are also pretty haunted. You know, so I expose myself to this a lot more than most people do, even a lot of paranormal investigators and ghost hunters.
Well, what do you recommend for people that are getting started? We only have about, 2 minutes left here, Tim?
Educate yourself.
And how do they do that?
You know, there's a couple of really great courses out there. The course offered through Troy Taylor's American Ghost Society is an awesome one. Flamel College is another great one. And I just recently took another one that I think is one of the best out there now through Paranexus. Because not only does it teach you how to use equipment and fill out log sheets and all of that, it actually gets into, you know, why do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
What is your reasoning for getting into the field? You know, and I'm not against new groups starting up and all of that, but I've seen some of them come out. I had one guy a couple of years ago put on his website a donation button so that he and his wife could buy a house.
Oh, geez.
You know, that to me is just tacky.
Yeah, I agree.
And I understand that we have costs. And I'm okay with people asking for donations and all, but to charge people $1,200 to look at, you know, 10 photographs or half an hour of video footage is a little bit much.
Exactly. Well, Dusty, thank you very much for spending time with us here this evening. I hope that you'll come back on the show when your new books are coming out. We'll talk to you some more.
Great. Anytime, Dave. I appreciate it. You too, Tim.
And now you're going to be out at Mid-South Paranormal Conference?
Sure am.
All right, great. Well, I'll see you out there. And all you guys, check out our website at darknessradio.com. Click on the events page, and you too can join us out at the Mid-South Paranormal Conference. See Dusty Smith, myself, Patrick Burns, and a host of other great speakers. We'll be back with more after the top of the hour. Stay with us. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.